All right, let's talk about minimalism. By minimalism, I mean living the minimalistic lifestyle, essentially having the minimal amount of belongings in order to live the most freedom-fulfilled life. And give you guys a quick story to help you understand how I got into this and why, and then we'll talk about the how-tos and all the rest of that stuff. So back in May of 2012, I was fresh out of a three-year relationship, and my girlfriend broke up in, I think, February. And at the time, I had a two-bedroom apartment in Marina Del Rey. I had just lost about 60 pounds. So I was kind of in a new place in my life. My girlfriend had moved out. I was in shape. And I was really ready to focus on, like, meeting other girls and going out more, partying, having more fun. And I was just kind of getting sick of L.A., sick of the same old, same old. And my sister at the time was living in New York City, and she had a bedroom open up in her two-bedroom place in New York. And I also, she was really inspired by my weight loss story, and she had some weight to lose. So I decided to move to New York, put her on a weight loss program, and basically be her live-in coach. So I had a bunch of loose ends to tie up. I had my lease that I had to get out of in my two-bedroom place. I had a bunch of shit. Furniture, boxes, just stuff I'd aggregated through the years. And, I needed to figure out something to do, you know, where to put all this shit. So all I took with me, to New York was, you know, a suitcase worth of summer clothes. I knew starting in the summer, I was going to be traveling through Europe for about 3 months. So basically what I did was, I threw away as much stuff as I could possibly throw away. I put the rest of it in a storage unit, and I just grab my suitcase and move out there. And, I spent the next 3 months after that in Europe. And then I didn't even come back to LA. I thought I might come back to LA, but I ended up moving to New York. And, for about almost 2 years, I had all my crap in a storage unit in Marina Del Rey. It was costing me about $300 a month. Just how much I missed that shit. How often did I miss the stuff in the storage unit? I didn't miss it at all. I never fucking missed it. And I ended up paying 300 times 24, which is about $7,200 to store that shit, which was way more than it was worth. I had some couches and some furniture and some boxes. I paid $7,200 motherfucking dollars to store that crap, all right? And when I went back and finally got it all out of storage, I pretty much gave all of it away and donated everything I could to Salvation Army or Goodwill, and I didn't miss it a bit. So since then, I've been leading the complete minimal lifestyle. And the funny thing about it is I'm probably on, I don't know, between 20 and 25 different leases at the moment. I'm on three for apartments and houses. I have three cars that I also lease out, but those are all full-time rentals. So even though I have 20 houses and three leased cars, they're all constantly being rented out. Technically, I also own a shitload of furniture, but guess what? Those are all for vacation rentals that are being leased out. Right now, at the moment, I pretty much have all of my worldly possessions that I need with me, which are basically some t-shirts, some Henleys, some pants, a couple dress shirts, some pairs of shorts, four or five pairs of shoes, a swimsuit, one nice fitted suit, a couple pairs of dress shoes, a zip-up hoodie, a multi-purpose leather jacket, underwear, socks, belt, some workout shoes, sandals, toiletry bag, blow dryer, computer, iPhone, cords, camera, and a bunch of condoms, some lube, and my good old faithful, never leaves my side, fake service dog, Wiley. is lying right here. That's pretty much all I have. It's all in a suitcase and a backpack, and it all fits nicely in any Uber I decide to cruise around in LA. I'm leaving for Montreal for a week, and then I'm going to New York, and then I'm going to Europe for another month with some of the guys in the leverage group as well. So there's a few things I have in storage, and those consist of golf clubs and my hockey bag and sticks. And those are in a garage at my main place over on Larrabee Street. And that's not really storage, it's just a garage. And at any given time, if I'm golfing or playing hockey, I'll have that show with me as well. And then I've got my New York stuff as well, you know, winter clothes, which is consists of just basically a coat, some gloves, a couple scarves. And those are actually at my sister's place in New York. So that's everything I own that I don't currently rent out. Anything else that I own or lease, I rent. The only things I don't own or rent out are the things I just labeled. And if you look at most of the other moderators in Leverage, they're all exactly the same. So what does that tell you? Well, it could tell you two things. It could tell you one that, you know, we've all kind of stumbled across something, found a way to make it work, and it's clearly it's a good path. Or two, we're all just batshit crazy. But if you look at our lives and the typical shit we, you know, usually do compared to others, people would tend to agree with us in terms of what works better. A lot of the guys in this group as well, guys like Ken, guys like Adam, Jason, you know, all you guys who have kind of adopted the whole Airbnb life hack. You're moving around, you're traveling more. You've probably adopted the idea that having less shit is better. So I don't miss any of that stuff. I love having the least amount of stuff as possible. And I love the freedom it allows me to move around, not be tied to things. You know, a lot of people buy shit to fill some sort of void or some sort of need that isn't being fulfilled in life. Like if you're lonely or you've been masturbating 3 times a day for the last year because you haven't gotten laid, you know, when you buy that new pair of shoes, it feels good. You get that little dopamine rush by buying something new. It's like this new exciting thing in your life. But that high only lasts for maybe 20 minutes, maybe a day, maybe a week if you're lucky. I mean, I'm sure someone on here has bought a new car in the past year or two. How long did that high last from buying the new car? At the most, what, a few days? Like, you know, maybe a little bit every time you drive it. If it's something like super sick, you know, if you bought yourself a Lamborghini, well, that's a little different. But if you bought yourself like, you know, a Toyota Prius, that's basically just designed to get you from point A to point B. Yeah, it's a little bit exciting for the first day or two, but then it's just another fucking Prius. Doesn't give you any happiness in your life. And it's basically a depreciating liability because every single day it costs you money. And, you know, eventually it'll be worth $0. You'll run it into the ground. Sure, you'll get value and use out of it. But it's not like this thing that's appreciating in value. It's not an asset. It's a liability. So pretty much everything you buy in life, not everything, but 99.5% of things, unless you're a really good investor, are going to be liabilities. You know, you pay for it, you use it, and it basically goes to zero. As opposed to other sort of appreciating assets, like buying real estate, property, you know, investing in an Airbnb spot, having that make you money every month. You know, when you put furniture and those sorts of things into a rental property, those are assets. They're not exactly liabilities because you're making money off those things. They're bringing more money in than you're losing every month. So, you know, just because I own a shitload of furniture, that's not furniture that I use. It's furniture that makes me dollars. So, you know, all of the mods in the group look like this. Like I said, it's the way to go. So first, let me ask, is anyone on the call like not sold on this idea or still hanging on to a bunch of worthless shit? Like if I hear from anyone on this call that they have a storage unit, I guarantee you're wasting your money. It's one of the worst decisions you could make unless you have like, I don't know, the diamond mine from South Africa in there that you know, you have nowhere else to put it. But even then, it should be in a museum. You should be making money off it. So let me ask, does anyone on this call have a storage unit or currently have, you know, a bunch of shit that's piling up that's costing them money? No? Speak now, forever hold your peace. Yeah. Okay. Good. Let me ask from, let's see who's on the call, who's kind of embracing the minimalist sort of stuff. I want to hear from Ken and I want to hear from Patrick. So Ken, what's been your experience with this whole process?
Well, I agree with everything you said. So a little bit, probably like a year after like I met you guys, I actually went into my closet and then I sold a bunch of shit like on eBay and actually made about like $1,000. And some of those shirts, you know, I bought like a while back, but I still wanted to keep it for some type of value. But you know, it wasn't doing anything for me because, you know, fashion was out of style and I was just like sitting there. So basically, I wanted to get some type of like return on investment. So I sold a bunch of stuff in there and then I went back into my parents' like a storage unit that they had. I actually sold a bunch of my stuff from back in the day, like Nintendo games, like all that kind of stuff. But jumping up to like the current time, yeah, I do like the whole Airbnb hack, and I think it's the best because you keep your place like minimally like furnished, you're getting like a return on investment, and it makes you like not want to buy like newer shit. Like you don't want to buy like a new TV. Like how often are you gonna be in your living room sitting there watching TV? Most of the time you'll be working or like gaming or trying to make other money. So getting that TV, it might give you like a short term like value, but in the long run, you're gonna lose tons of money on it.
Yeah, totally.
I have a place in West Hollywood, like nearby like Running Canyon. And then I travel a lot for work, so when I'm not working, when I'm not in town, I just Airbnb it out. So basically I'm living there for free. I don't have to pay any rent. And then when I go, I travel for like work, you know, someone's like staying there and I'm making money off it.
Totally. Awesome. So Ken's embraced it. Sasha could be the biggest vagabond we have in the group at the moment. I mean,
I just got on Rob. So watch what you say.
So yeah, I know. That's why I called your name. So why don't you, you know, give your experience of living the nomad lifestyle, the sort of shit it allows you to do, the sort of annoyances that you have to deal with because of it.
Yeah, I'll give you guys a quick summary. I can't stay on too long. But I'm in a really unique situation, which has pros and cons because of the company that I work with. You know, we have housing that's provided for employees in the cities that I go to. You know, I go to cities to help manage the operations in the cities that we operate. So I don't spend a lot of time trying to find housing. You know, that's because we already have housing available. But I do bounce around a lot within the city that I'm in because, you know, we want to maximize revenues, maximize our occupancy. So I'm not going to block off a place, you know, and we want it to stay rentable, right? So I might be in a place for a night and then be in a place for 3 nights and then be in three other places for 3 more nights, you know, bouncing around a lot. So my experience is kind of vagabond to the extreme. what I often do is have when I'm in a city for a while, I'll have a big bag that has a lot of kind of the bulky stuff that I don't need day to day, but I need to have available or, you know, need to just have as possessions of mine. And then I have a smaller bag that's more of my day to day that I make sure I have with me each night. So I have a backpack, like a little duffel bag, and then a bigger suitcase. I have still a carry on. And that's my whole life. I do have a closet in a couple other cities with, you know, because each city kind of has a different style and different clothing requirements. I'm not going to have a heavy winter coat in LA. But in general, I've kind of minimized all the way down to being able to fly anywhere in the world with a carry-on. And that can be very self-sufficient with that.
So you have a carry-on, a duffel, and a backpack.
Yeah. Small duffel, like not like, you know, it's small enough that I can get away with carrying it on as well. I've only been stopped one time and say like, oh, you have to check one of those bags. Every other time I can do everything, carry on with everything.
Nice. And that's huge too because, you know, like what last time I was in Europe, I only took a carry on and a backpack and I even had to bring camera equipment. To be able to film some of the guys, like, you know, doing stuff in field. And the camera equipment took up half of my carry-on. So I had my backpack. I think I brought like three shorts, three shirts, bathing suit, some shoes. And that's pretty much all I needed, you know, cruise on Europe in the summer. Like, yeah, how much stuff are you really going to need?
When you're doing a trip like that, it feels a lot different, because with me, I need to have everything like for my whole life, right? So there's certain things that I have that you definitely don't need when you're traveling to Europe, and you're looking at a cost benefit, right? So, you know, I'm going to take a silly example, like, I don't know, like a packet of NyQuil, right? Like, let's say I get sick and buy a bunch of NyQuil and I have a bunch left over, and like, you know, it's not super cheap. It's not super expensive. Now, is it worth the space of saving it and putting it in my bag and lugging it around until I need it again? Or do I toss it and buy it when I need it again? Right? There's a lot of stuff like that. A lot. And you don't really realize it until you're trying to get down to the least amount of space possible. When you're going on one trip and you're, you know, putting stuff in storage or everything, it's a much lesser concern. But when you're traveling with all your stuff constantly, every little item, you know, adds up pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting you mentioned even NyQuil, you know, really getting down to like the tiniest thing, you know?
I just buy not like when I'm found a place where I'll just like buy a thing of mouthwash and carry it around with me and then like dish it when I fly, just because it's, you know, like that bulky stuff like that, you know, it's not worth the space when you're, you know, traveling between cities.
Yeah, I've even gotten so far down to, I have a big thing of hairspray, you know, in like my main spot, but whenever I leave, I fill up a little thing of hairspray, even though they're both going to fit in my toiletry bag. That extra weight of maybe half a pound makes a difference. And, you know, if I got the rest filled up with condoms or something else, then I can't fit it. So, you know, tiny shit like that. And it's really important to be able to have all your shit carry on, because if God forbid you lose it, you lose your whole life, right? If the airline loses it, you lose your whole life. And every item I have is super versatile. Like the bathing suit I have, it also doubles as shorts. Like, you wouldn't know it's a bathing suit. And if you're wearing a bathing suit, you wouldn't know it's shorts. So that saves me an article of clothing right there. And if you lose that shit on a flight, or they lose your luggage and you got to wait for it and you're bouncing around and you're flying standby or whatever, then you're really fucked. Sasha, anything else you want to talk about as far as your minimalist experience?
Our situation is like to the extreme. Like, you got to dial like one Vagabond one to the max. Like, I'm like as close to the max as you can get without like living third world, like poor, like, you know, eating ramen every night. But it's definitely to the extreme. So some of the things I do probably, you know, don't apply to like, so what are the situations that people are in that they're like wanting, you know, that they're wanting information for, I guess, is the better.
I have suitcases that I bring to one city, to which I then bring a duffel bag, a big backpack, and a little backpack within that city when I'm going to another house, to then take just a backpack to my next location. I like, you know, those little, like, what are those Russian things where you put, like,
yeah,
you know,
I was just thinking that. You're the Nestle doll.
Inside. What are they called?
I don't know. The Nestle doll. I know what you're talking about.
I have my stuff in New York, but I bought my essentials in San Francisco. But then within San Francisco, I have my non-super essentials in my stores in San Francisco, which my less essentials go in my overnight duffel bag, my backpack when I go stay out at Dan's house. It's just a trail of my bigger doll left at the last place upon the bigger doll. It's fucking ridiculous.
I've gone the opposite direction where I don't want to deal with that. I just go like super minimalistic and just have like a few bags and they just go everywhere with me. Which is really difficult.
Yeah, but you're not on the winter clothes program. You didn't do the winter in Manhattan. So
that's
you don't
true.
Have a lot of
that's
winter clothes that we had. And I had to bring winter clothes to Paris. And then within Paris, I was going elsewhere. So I had to leave a few suits behind when I went to Milan to take less stuff to Milan with me. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's nuts. Robbie, Sasha, we've all been on the run for years.
So it's pretty easy to figure out what you need and what you don't need. If there's any question of whether or not you need it, you probably don't need it. Or it makes more sense to buy it when you get there. Does anyone on the call have like specific questions like, well, what should I do with this thing? Or I have, you know, well, what about these clothes or this thing I have? Like, should I get rid of it? Should I not? Does anyone have anything like that?
Adam, I know you're the one who brought it up and asked the question. What did you specifically want to know about minimalism? Because you're about to move from Philly to New York, I think. You just moved from Houston to Philly, and you're doing the whole Airbnb thing. You're starting to work for a company that's a bunch of fucking nomads. So what's your specific question?
Yeah, I mean,
Amish is going to be on the run for sure.
Well, I know, because for that, you know, carry on, Robbie, you usually carry a bigger bag, right? I'm just trying to figure out, essentially, like you said, what I need, what I don't need.
I would bring one big suitcase. It's an exact suitcase I get every, like, 6 months, same one over and over. It's cheap, too. It's like $120, but it's the most functional bag in the history of the world. It's really big. Within that bag, I have a $120 J.Crew duffel bag, like a military-style one, that I throw in my suitcase. I also throw in a little tiny backpack. Imagine a regular-sized backpack, then imagine a tiny little, like, endurance running backpack, you know, like a 50, like ultra-marathon backpack. So take a backpack in the middle of those two. Something that might carry a MacBook Mini, and like a couple of shirts, workout gloves, and like a toiletry bag. And that's really it. Really small backpack. So I'll put my really small backpack and my duffel bag inside my monster suitcase. Now I'm going to Miami for the next month. Okay. But now once within Miami, I don't want to carry on a huge backpack. But I know. So when I get on a plane and I get ready to take off, I have my huge backpack and I have my huge suitcase. Then once I'm established in the city, I have my little backpack and my little duffel bag. That becomes my little maneuver around 2 days, 5 days, 8 days, 6 days, you know, carrying bag. And I just create a home base for my big suitcase and my non-daily essentials. If I were you, Amish, I'd bring a monster suitcase. That is the exact one I'll show you. And a really big backpack and a little duffel bag and a little backpack. And a little duffel bag and a little backpack makes it easy. Just throw enough stuff in for like 4 days. You know, dress shoes, casual shoes, and workout shoes, two pairs of jeans, some shirts, some socks, some underwear, two dress shirts, you're good to go. You know, a hoodie or a cardigan, you know, that's basically all it's going to fit in this duffel bag. And then, you know, a toiletry bag, laptop, chargers, and some few essentials in your small backpack. And then you can just move along for the next 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 days, right? And this way you don't have to lug around a ton of shit. You don't want to be lugging around big-ass backpacks and big-ass suitcases, because most stuff you don't need for the next 5 days or the next 8 days. Most stuff you need for 30 days, but half that shit you won't wear for another 17 days.
Yeah, gotcha.
Right, so like I brought three suits, two winter coats, and three pairs of dress shoes to Europe, but then when I would go, you know, on the road for like a week or so, then I would just go down to what I was actually going to need for the next week. I don't need to lug around two huge winter coats and a fucking three dressed in three suits and all the rest for a week, right?
Yeah. So what I have over at Larrabee is I have a locking closet that's inside of a locked garage. I have a closet inside, but I also have a garage. And now that I'm leaving for about a month or two, I'm not going to have access to the stuff inside the closet. So I'll just put all that stuff in the garage and I can fit a car in there and I can fit a bunch of shit. So any clothes that I don't need, I just throw in there. Any extra stuff I can throw in there, and I can get to it at any time because it's not part of the house. So even if I have guests staying there, I can just pull up to the garage and pull it out, and I'm good to go. Another thing that, you know, people might have questions about is like eating healthy on the road. So one thing that I recently started doing like 3 weeks ago, or no, not even 2 weeks ago, is meal prep. Basically go to Trader Joe's, you buy vegetables, brown rice, protein, you know, shrimp, chicken, whatever, and you cook for the entire week. You put it in Tupperware bowls and you cruise around with that. That can be tough if you're moving like every night, because then you're bringing food with you, and if you're like gone for a bunch of hours during the middle of the day, it can go bad. So maybe for like a Sasha situation, that might be too tough. But if you know you're going to be somewhere for at least like 3 or 4 days, followed by another place 3 or 4 days, I think you're going to save a ton of money and a ton of time. And it's way healthier doing meal prep versus like always grabbing, you know, trying to grab healthy shit on the run. The less time you have, the probably less healthy it's going to be. You know, you can certainly do it. You can certainly like find a way to eat healthy by eating out every meal, but it's just not quite as good.
I'm all about protein shakes. Protein shakes. I just store up, you know, every day I get 3 or 4 or 5. I buy case of protein shakes stored all over the fucking planet, in the office, at my house, in a suitcase, in my storage, in my this, you know, in San Francisco. I have it at that. I have a case at the hotel, a case at Dan's house. So I'm go on the road, I buy 4 for the road. I have 2 there and 2 my next place. I just always have many, you know. If I know I'm leaving somewhere for 2 days, I'll just go buy 6 protein shakes and throw them in there. I cut down on the, you know, eating the other bullshit. I always have boxes of Crunch Bars and protein shakes, man.
Well, for those of you that want a more tasty diet, I would go with meal prep.
Yeah, I've done meal prep a decent amount. It's pretty easy. Like, I've got it down to pretty good right now. I mean, it doesn't take too long. It definitely eats up a big chunk of an afternoon, though. So I generally don't do it now because I don't have time. But if you're in somewhere for at least a week,
It might eat up 2 hours in an afternoon to prepare all the food, but you're saving, like, you know, 20, 30 minutes every single meal when you grab it, and it takes a minute versus 20 to get something.
I've been on a very serious Grubhub Seamless Postmates diet, though, for the last month. And on a size, anybody wants a stock pick, grocery stores are going to zero. Those motherfuckers are all going to zero. 10 years from now, nobody is going grocery shopping. They won't even be buying food from grocery stores. That'll be a prehistoric idea. Trader Joe, you know, Whole Foods and a couple other publicly traded, there's no way they're not going to zero. That was all that I told Dan and a couple other people. It was about 3 months ago. I was on a call with a big growth equity investor a week or so ago. He invested in Plated. The CEO of Plated was at John Mackey's house, who's the CEO of Whole Foods, which is like an $8 billion company. And they're meeting with them to figure out what they can do, because Whole Foods is starting to feel the pain on groceries with Grubhub, Seamless, Postmates, Instacart, and all the health food options. It's becoming sort of prehistoric to think about. The only people going to cook are people that enjoy cooking. Right? Otherwise, there is no real reason to cook anymore. So there will be no reason to go to grocery stores 5 years from now. Those are the motherfuckers who are going bankrupt.
Anything else you want to explain on that to extrapolate on the theory?
Without getting into like heavy and boring finance, probably not. Does anybody have any questions regarding that?
The average dodo who's never like really invested in stocks, that has no idea how to capitalize on that, on this information, if it's right, what would they do?
Oh boy, this is going to take a long time to explain. There's no way to predict which grocery stores are going to be the losers. I'm sure all of them will. But there might be some winner because they'll consolidate or acquire some other people. Or, you know, a good example might be Yahoo, which has not died. Yahoo's a pretty big piece of shit, except they invested in Alibaba a few years ago. Alibaba is a monster, so Yahoo survived. So what you don't know is maybe Albertsons or Safeway or one of these other grocers have invested in Plated or Seamless or Grubhub. And I don't know if they have, but maybe one does. One does survive. So there's no way of knowing which grocery store is going to be the one that survives. I will just short all 10 publicly traded grocery stores and sit back and wait 5 years. My thesis is, you know, a year ago, you know, you rarely ever heard the word or the term Grubhub, Seamless, Postmates, Instacart. Now, MIT 170 IQ whizzes are dropping out every day to start food delivery services. An argument for not eating out would be health. But now there's so many healthy, vegan, sugar-free, gluten-free, weight loss, you know, casual fast dining concepts. There is no real reason to cook anymore, because you can get all the nutritional value you want from restaurants before you had to go to the restaurants. They can be delivered to you. We also live in a really optimized world now, where time is extremely important. We don't have time to go grocery store. We don't have time to go grocery shopping, cooking, et cetera. People are working longer hours. You know, we can just hit a couple of buttons and, you know, your favorite food is at your house in 40 minutes on a regular basis. What reason would you have to actually go to Safeway, spend an hour shopping, come home, pack up, restock milk, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, it's just crazy. I heard the word Grubhub, Seamless, Postmates, you know, once a week a year ago. I hear Sasha. How many times a week do you think you hear those terms in LA?
Oh, great. It must be 50 times a week.
It must be. Yeah. Right? I probably see this stuff being delivered 25 times a week, just showing up at friends' houses and, oh, Grubhub's getting here. You know, I get home, people order Grubhub, et cetera. It's pretty crazy. So, given that my thesis is people will not be going grocery shopping 5 years from now, how do the grocery stores survive? Well, one or two or three might become, you know, might turn their delis into great delivery resources. You know, a few might survive, so it's really tough to predict which ones are going to survive. So you just bet all of them. That's done through either, you know, shorting the stock or buying a put on the option. I'm not going to give a finance 101 lesson, but those are the options. You have to read for yourself, understand your own risk, how much you want to bet, et cetera. But the bets should be equally weighted. You don't want to bet 1,000 on this one and 1,000 on that one, but 2,000 on a different one. You just, you know, you'll bet 10,000 against all 10 of them. And, you know, four will stay flat and six will die. And that's how you'll end up making your money. You know, you'll end up doing 60% of your money if they go to zero. I suspect a few will be going bankrupt in the next 8 years. I'd be really surprised if two of them don't go bankrupt in the next 10 years. There's no way they'll survive. Look, if you look
this is super relevant to the topic of minimalism, because, you know, if you kind of look at minimalism from a bird's eye standpoint, like a grocery store would be the least, the worst example. You know, you have this huge warehouse with a ton of shit in it, versus these other companies like Grubhub or Seamless, who are super mobile and agile, who can bring food to a person at a one-off time. And essentially, that's what you're going to do.
Grubhub and Seamless don't even own anything. They just have they have code, right? Code that enables an app for you to push a button and food to show up. When I look at Uber, they don't own anything. They own lines of code, a $50 billion fucking company. These taxi medallion ding-dongs, you know, I wrote the book years ago. When taxi, so the ticker symbol is taxi, TAXI. The way they make the money is they give loans to people that want to buy a medallion. Medallion is what gives you the right to own a taxi. At the time in New York, the medallion cost $1.2 million in October of 2013. And I said, taxis are going to $0. Whoever's publicly traded that is in the space that lives off of taxis being a means operating within this world are going to go to fucking $0. Sure enough, here we are less than 2 years later. You know, the stock market's up like, I don't know, 30%. And taxi, even given that, is down 40%. Which what that means is it's underperformed. So if the market were flat over the last few years, taxi would probably be down to like $5. But because the market's up so much, it's keeping taxi a little bit alive. But, you know, nobody's taking a taxi 6 years from now. You know, in that vein, I also believe the car manufacturers and designers, retailers, I think they're going to get annihilated too. At least two or three or four of the companies will lose the autonomous car race, so they should stop. Between autonomous cars and Uber and all the rest, there's going to be no reason to own a car. So a few car companies will win the race, you know, and making cars and all the rest, and a bunch of the others are going to get slaughtered. So I don't know, maybe a year from now, I'll go in and I'll buy the puts on 10 of these different companies. Buy the puts, I mean bet against, but it's a fixed amount of money I can lose because it's the leveraged option. And, you know, three or four, I'll lose my bet, but, you know, two or three, I'll, let's say I bet $10,000 on 10 of them, four of them, I'll lose my entire 10,000. Four of them, I'll make 20,000, but one or two will go to zero and I'll make like 20-1 on my money. And that's the strategy. So just imagine too, if the economy turns and autonomous driving and Uber and people are heading more to urban areas where you don't own cars, who the fuck is buying a car 8 years from now? It will seem very silly to be buying a car 8 years from now. Even now, people tell me they're buying a car. I go, why would you do that? Aren't you just Uber everywhere? That's so weird. Such a waste of time to own a car.
It would become a specialty thing, like, oh, I love speed and, you know, I want my, you know, high performance car.
Yeah, that's a super outlier. You know, you want a Ferrari for speed, it's exciting, okay, cool. But, you know, to own a car, you know, even Luis had to take his brother to the airport, so you're an idiot. You know, you own a car, you have to take people to the airport, you get car washes, you have to look for parking, you have to pay for parking, car insurance. Once every 2 years, you get in an accident, whether it's your fault or not, you got to deal with insurance, cars breaking down. Leave stuff in your car, you have to go back and get it. You have to loan it to people. You have to stop 4 to 10 times a month to pump gas. You got to make your car insurance payment. You get pulled over, parking tickets. It's a huge fucking time sink. People don't understand parking. I did the math and I posted in the group a few years ago. I was losing like, I had a profitable rent of like plus $40,000 for me to sell my car. Just the market returns that I was losing, you know, my money sitting in a car instead of cash in the market at 8% historically. was a loser. The time I was spending, you know, when you park, you go to the gym, you don't get to park in front of the front door of the gym. You got to drive 4 minutes away, park in a parking garage, walk down, go to the gym, walk back, walk up to your car, drive down, pay to leave. It's just a pain in the fucking ass. And so I went down, you know, what were the numbers? I posted it was something like I was spending $300 a month Ubering, but my car, between insurance and gas and sink and opportunity costs, was significantly more. I sold my car. This was living in L.A. I sold my car, and it cost me like $1,300 a month between, you know, getting everywhere in the world cost me $1,300 a month. But I was saving like 400 hours a year that was no longer dedicated to just being a car owner. If you understand, having to go to DMV and car washes and getting gas is such a time thing. Now, if you make $8 an hour, man, who really cares, right? But if you're making, you know, any meaningful amount of money, I don't have time to be doing those kind of things. 50 hours a year has like a real, 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 500 hours a year. It's a really big meaning to me. We're talking, I wouldn't say, but we're talking real money.
Totally. Car is the greatest thing I fucking got rid of. I sold my Infiniti about 2 months ago, missed it for about a day, and I've got three cars. Well, Jesse and I have been to have three cars, and they're all leased out this month, or they're all rented out, making $2,500 on about $1,500. Typically, they don't do quite that well on relay rides, but during the summer.
Look at the wind.
Yep. And especially
you weren't happy, really. The day I sold my car was like the most I was so like. So happy. I never had to park it again. I had to wash it. I had to drive anyone to the fucking airport. I'd have to look for parking. I just felt freedom, just totally liberated. And for me, you know, my car was paid off. It was, you know, brand new. It was worth a lot more. It paid off. It was still worth like $60,000. That was $60,000. I got to just put the S&P. And, you know, fortunately for me, the S&P is up like 20 cents since then. Good game me. But, you know, I reduced the car. You know, I remember right before I sold my car, like 2 months before, I didn't change my tires, $2,000.
I had to go to court because I don't have a fucking home, so all my mail goes to my parents' house. So I didn't get the registration renewal until like 2 months later because I was out of town. And then when I finally got it, I was like, I don't think I'm going to pay because I'm going to sell my car. And a week before I fucking sold my car, I got pulled over and I got a fix-it ticket for not having updated registration. And when I tried to just like go to a police station to have a cop sign off the ticket, he's like, oh, well, you know, you sold the car, so there's nothing for me to sign off. You're going to have to take this to court. So I spent
$4
in court. At the end of the day, I had to pay $200 for this bullshit. I lit 4 hours on fire. And yeah, I've had to do that many times over different sort of tickets, different sort of like, you know, driving related bullshit. And if you had a lifetime, oh my God.
I would love to know lifetime how many hours I am deep into the DMV and court and getting pulled over and getting gas and paying insurance and calling new insurance companies and getting breaks. Oh my God, it must be a fucking 1,000 hours. I mean, 1,000 hours. Even if we say my time is only worth $100 an hour, I've dusted $100,000 in opportunity costs plus the money for all those things. Ubering at $1,000 a month. What?
Dude, the worst thing of all of that is dealing with the motherfucking scum of the planet in the court systems and the DMV. Like, nothing pisses me off more than dealing with those fucking losers and just ruining my month for how miserable they are and talking to those people. It's like the dregs of society. Fuck that.
You know, Steve Jobs, I don't know the whole, Steve Jobs is the one that is noted for making it popular. I don't know if he popularized it. You notice he wore the same outfit every day for like 20 years, right? Mark Zuckerberg now does, you know, gray shirt, jeans, hoodie, same outfit every day. It's to optimize the time. It's one less decision they had to make, one less thing they had to think about. It's all about optimizing the time because time is so valuable. They just wore the same outfit every single day. Well, I'm not going to do that. But one thing I could do is optimize for time with, you know, my car. I mean, just getting, look, going and looking for gas and pulling over and waiting to get it done. It's just such a time sink. And then having to drive, I'd much rather be in the back of an Uber and be able to get conference calls done and, you know, actually be productive than sitting in a car. It's just such a time sink. Unbelievable time sink. And net dollars at the end of the year, it's cheaper. Net dollars is cheaper to only Uber and not own a car. That's already a win right there. And the other option is time. I think people really, really underestimate how much time they invest in a car. You get in one accident, you've lit 60 hours on fire. It's a 1 year long process with insurance back and forth, having an adjuster come taking it to the body shop, another quote of this or that. Oh my God, what a fucking disaster.
Totally. The car thing's huge. The house thing is huge. You know, for people that live in a house and they don't Airbnb it when they travel, like, you're just lighting money on fire. And all the time you save too, like, one thing that you didn't, I mean, you mentioned this, but to really touch on it, like, every time you're driving in an Uber, you're getting work done, versus when you're driving, there's no way you can get work done. And if you're texting on your phone and God forbid you fucking, hit a dog or get in an accident and they can tell that you're texting, you're fucked. Like, just one little thing like that could completely ruin your life. And there's ain't no time ever where I'm not in the car driving and not texting. So I know if I'm driving, I'm like the super negative free roll.
No DUIs either.
Yep.
No DUIs, no lapse insurance, no repairs, no nothing, none of that shit.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else on minimalism that we didn't cover. I mean, basically, don't buy ever rent unless it's an investment. I think it's safe to say, less is more. And shit, I don't know. Anyone else have any questions?
What do you do about doing laundry?
Good question.
Fluff and fold. Just drop it off at a wash. Fluff and fold.
And occasionally, if you're at a place where there's a, machine, and you're just going to be like on the computer for a few hours, and then I do it. Usually, I fluff and fold.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I got one. The pros and cons of actually, so like all the clothes that you don't need or wear anymore. I've actually donated most of them and got the tax write off, but. I mean, the way I figure, I go to sell on eBay, that's time right there. I probably won't get, the full price. What would you guys do? Did you guys sell your clothes or just
write off?
Tax write-offs. I do tax write-offs every year or two with clothes.
All right. That's what I figured.
I mean, you're going to spend more time selling them.
Yeah. All right, just drop them off and be done with it.
Yeah.
Or you can just be me and sell your clothes to Robbie. This guy buys more of my clothes than anybody. This guy buys more clothes from me than I buy from stores. I actually sell a lot of my clothes to friends. It's sort of weird.
I have to think Robbie bought a shirt or two off me.
Josh and Robbie are my two biggest clients. My two biggest clothing clients. Anybody else have any questions on the topic?
All right, guys. Talk to you later.